Welcome to The Summit, a podcast focused on bringing you the knowledge and insight for industry leaders. I'm your host, Kyle Hamer, and I'm on a mission to help you exceed your potential. As a sales guy turned marketer, I'm passionate about building sustainable businesses. And if there's one thing I've learned, it's that you won't find an overnight growth scheme, shortcuts to success, or a way to hack yourself to the top. Nope, success is the byproduct of great relationships, and we're here to help you unlock that success, one conversation at a time.
In a lot of cases, an outside sales rep has become an inside sales rep. And those are two kind of different skill sets.
Welcome. Thanks for stopping by today. Our guest is Rob Smith of Sales Accelerated. Rob is a fractional VP of sales. And today we're actually going to spend a little bit of time talking about moving from the field to virtual. COVID's causing all kinds of changes, and sales teams are having to adjust. So Rob's just the guy to give us the insight. But before we do, Rob, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Kyle. So my name's Rob Smith. I'm president and founder of a sales consulting organization. I actually spent the majority of my career, 20 plus years, in a big corporate environment. I'm actually a recovering electrical engineer. I started my career as an electrical engineer and then hopped into sales. And when I did that, I went to go work for a division of a large corporation, and the guy who was five or so tiers above me, the VP of sales, was just a great guy, awesome leader, still a friend of mine, actually, to this day. I wanted to be him when I grew up. So I set about that task and took the jobs the corporate told me to take and moved to the cities the corporate told me to move to, and ultimately made it, got there to the top, you know, as the VP of sales, looked around. I was like, I don't want to do this for the rest of my career. So I founded 5S Sales Consulting. That's my company. And as Kyle mentioned, I've got an affiliation with a larger organization, Sales Acceleration. That's a 10-year-old company out of Indianapolis, founded by two ex-corporate VPs of sales. And they look for knuckleheads like me who've attained the VP level within a complicated organization, tired of the politics, the travel, missing games and recitals and all like that kind of stuff. And so I take, you know, the skills that I built over a 20 plus year career in sales and apply that to the owners of small and medium sized businesses. So very rewarding, much more so than corporate America.
Well, you touch on it there a little bit. You talk about, you know, being able to be home for recitals and sporting events, et cetera. You were a road warrior, sounds like, with even just in your progression, moving up the chain in the corporate world, like it wasn't a lot of time at home.
No, I was gone 90% of the time. I was on anywhere between 2 and 6 planes a week, usually. I had a sales team across 14 different time zones, managing $650 million in revenue. I was a busy dude. I was very happy to hand in my Rockstar United card because I've flown around 8 times, literally, over a few times a year. I'd just take 3 weeks, pack a bag, and fly from Houston to Tokyo to Singapore to Dubai, Rome, London, and then back home, or some variation of that, you know, stopovers in China and stuff like that. So, you know, people think that's sexy, and it is for about 12 months. And then, you know, look, I've done some cool stuff. I've hiked on the Great Wall of China. You know, I've been to the top of the tallest, you know, building in the world in Dubai. So I've seen some cool stuff. I've been to Mass at the Vatican.
That's cool. That's not something you hear every day. You're like, hey, you know, I actually went to Mass with the Pope.
Yeah. So I've done some cool stuff, but you know, after a while, it's just steel and concrete and glass, really. I mean, you're just in a city. But anyway. Yeah.
And I think the thing that makes the transition that we've all had to go through, you know, related to COVID, probably even more interesting for you. And it helps that the transition that you had to go through, moving from flying all the time, being on the road all the time, and just the shift in dynamic to, hey, now I got to figure out how to sell or start a business and do things differently. But I'm not on an airplane. I'm not talking to people that are, you know, I'm not running $650 million. Now I'm running $650. There's probably a lot of sales guys out there and sales organizations that are going, I got this great sales rep with this huge you know, this huge salary and expense account, and they can't use, I'm not getting anything out of either. What do we do? What's the experience like for those guys? Like right now, what's a normal field rep or an outside sales rep? What's going through their mind these days?
I would say there's probably, I mean, cause we're pretty far into this, right? I mean, right post outbreak, everybody was just kind of nuts. I mean, everybody's trying to find their way, right? I think some people have found their way, and I think there are others there that are still struggling a little bit. And I think those found their way, adopted this new virtual world readily. They took a look at, kind of revisited their value proposition or unique selling USP, whatever you want to call it. Because what got you the sale pre-outbreak may still work, but may not get you the sale post outbreak. So those that have adjusted successfully, I know that was a, you know, an ingredient in the stew, so to speak, to reevaluate, you know, how you're positioning yourself, your product, your company, to your customers. Because I think one of the opportunities that we've had through this whole mess is to connect with our customers on a different level, because we're all going through the same things. We've got kids at home that should be in school, potentially, and, you know, spending a lot more time with family, which can be a good thing, but I'm guessing that in addition to the COVID stats increasing, divorce is increasing as well. You know, so it's kind of an emotional time. So it's an opportunity for you to connect more on that kind of level. And certainly empathy when dealing with your customers or potential customers, is another piece, that goes into it. You know, they may not be in a position to be wanting to listen to a hard pitch. So you kind of got to find your way, through that. You know, a couple other things, you've got to be a lot more deliberate in this kind of medium, about who you're targeting, how you're targeting them, how you're running your virtual meetings. And you know, one skill that a salesperson needs that hasn't changed is you need to know when to press and you need to know when to shut up and listen. You know, it might be more impactful to the customer if they're distracted, if you notice they're distracted or something, call them out and say, "Hey man, is now not a good time? You got something, you know, that you want to talk about?" Or that kind of connection that can lead to deeper, longer lasting and more lucrative relationships in the long term. You know, I think it's also caused those that have been able to transition successfully to really think about who the new kind of decision makers are. Cause that may have shifted. You want to take a look at that. Certainly you may not need to be talking to the same people you were post outbreak than pre outbreak. So I know I just ran through a lot of kind of random top of mind stuff there, but
I don't think you really ran through a lot of random. I think one of the things that I'm most curious about is the interchangeability. I mean, I understand that we're in a more blended approach now where there's some travel and some people are able to still get face to face. But when you're a field sales rep and you can't call into the office because everybody's working from home and everybody's using email, all of a sudden the skills that you used with building relationships, you know, having a beer, going and playing golf, meeting people at trade shows, those types of things, all of a sudden they're gone. What are the skills that, you know, he's like, "Hey, you maybe thought you didn't need them before, but you're definitely going to need them now as you transition back through the next 18 months and we figure out, you know, when can we go back to face-to-face and in sales the way it used to be?"
Just a little bit of a sidebar there. I know a lot of sales reps that are actually playing more golf now than pre-outbreak, at least here in Texas. That was one of the few things that remained open.
It's funny to hear you say that because I have a friend who just bought a golf shop in central Iowa. And he was like, "Man, we just crushed the previous owners." You know, he's like, "We did in 1 year." Well, actually he said we did in 6 months what they did in the previous 2 years because of COVID, because everybody needed clubs and balls and bags and upgrading everything. Yeah. So he's not everybody's been frozen out with the sales.
Yep. So to your question though, I mean, I think people, sales reps, need to reevaluate communicating, not only, you know, internally through a different medium. And look, you can Google and get all kinds of ideas on how to tighten up, say, an email to have calls to action and maybe soften language. Certainly important right now, maybe not being as direct. Hey, hope you and your family are well. So you need to be a little softer, I would say, in your delivery, at least, you know, via email, which can, I think, pre-outbreak, everybody was kind of in the mode of Kurt, hey, I need this, or whatever. Modifying your style to fit kind of the time as effective. And you need to be better about managing your follow-up and your follow-through, because I wasn't in corporate at the time, but I still have a lot of friends in corporate. They said as soon as the outbreak hit and everything shut down, they went from getting maybe 70 emails a day to like 200, because it's what you said it in kind of your question, the way you posed it, is everybody sitting at their desk. Right. So I think I'll share a personal story. You know, if you're still in an area, or if you're still uncomfortable or can't go out and see a customer or something like that, I would push the fact, or push some sort of virtual interaction, whether it's, you know, Zoom, whether it's FaceTime or whatever. We were kind of a few weeks into the outbreak, and I've got two tween girls, and they were going nuts because they kind of social, missed their friends and stuff like that. And I hadn't really thought of it, but I made them schedule at least 15, 20 minutes or something a day. Take 15 or 20 minutes a day, connect with a friend, FaceTime them, whatever, just so you can see them and interact with them. So, you know, even though we may not be able to visit our customers in person, you can still use the technology to at least try to, as best you can, simulate that experience and be able to see. It helps. There's psychology behind it. You can Google that too. I'm sure, you know, all kinds of articles about the psychology of quarantine.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting because when quarantine hit, right, every email from somebody who had your email address tucked away in the catacombs of their marketing tool or their sales tool, they were sending you messages saying, you know, in these challenging times, and this is the new normal. And, you know, and I think for a lot of sales guys, especially field sales guys that I know, there's a certain makeup to, hey, I'm extroverted enough that I enjoy being around people. I miss the social interaction. I feed off of other people's energy. It charges me up, right? There's a lot to that. But when you can't feed off of other people's energy and you're not attracting it, like sometimes it's hard to manufacture that energy or that same level of connection via screen. What sort of things do you coach, or do you look at, or at least providing managers to say, okay, look, that normal charisma and energy may not translate the same way in virtual. How do you compensate for that?
That's a good question. I think I'll go back to something I said maybe a little earlier. You can still read reaction, right? Whether it's, I know this guy's looking at his phone, or, you know, I can tell that he's not looking into the camera. He's, you know, probably dinking around with his, you got to be, I think, in the absence of being able to be in person and capture someone with, you know, charisma, as you put it, you know, I think you need to be super mindful of the information that you're passing out, and also those cues that tell you that, you know, this guy's checked out, and have something as best you can at the ready that would be, you know, attention grabbing, to bring them back into the conversation. And I, you know, any number of examples of, you know, having something in your pocket that, you know, is a hot button, but, you know, that, and I would say that's probably easier to do with established relationships, you know, more so than maybe ones that you're trying to nurture, and grow, you know, in a virtual setting.
You know, I think it's interesting. One of the things that I've observed casually, because I'm not a field rep. And 100 years ago, I had a field rep type of experience, right, where I was selling long term care insurance door to door in the country. Like you have to have
the tough gig,
a little
dude.
Bit of. It was no joke. That's for sure. There's a reason why I'm not doing it today. I mean, the guys that are doing that, there's a certain level of technique and skill that you develop over time. And all of a sudden the tools that you would use to prospect or to open conversations, those things are all switched. And what I realized, or what I've been observing, is it seems like for many field reps, there's not the same level of comfort with technology. There's not the same level of comfort when it comes to, you know, managing stuff and trusting your CRM, using your computer, like you were talking about, to create the engagement. And even stuff as simple as, well, how do I introduce myself in prospect? I don't want a cold call. I haven't cold called ever, or, you know, and since when? But now how do I get new business? I got this quota I've got to hit. My customers don't have as much money because they're part of the economy that was impacted. Now what? If I'm a rep that's in that situation where maybe I don't feel like I have all of the skills, if you're my VP of sales, what do you tell me to do? Like, how do you coach me or get me through this period?
So I'm breaking down a big problem into smaller pieces, right? That's my recovering engineer brain. And I've mentioned a couple of things, I think, along the way here. I talk about value prop and how it may not be the same. You need to sit down and kind of take stock, and you need to also come up with an elevator pitch or a value prop for yourself, especially for new clients. And you can start by talking to your existing clients and, you know, those that you have relationships with. Gather some data points. So like, hey, why do you buy from me? Why do you buy from my company? What kind of challenges are you facing, you know, in this environment? What are you worrying about? And capture some of that stuff, because that's where the gold is. And then you can apply that data, you know, manipulate it, manufacture it, and turn that into kind of an approach to new business. Because unless you understand, you know, going back to something I've said over and over, what sold them pre-outbreak may or may not be selling them post-outbreak. And the more you can understand, you know, the shifts and the risks that people are, you know, that are very real to your customers, and they're trying to work through them the same way, tailor it to that kind of situation. And I think you'll find the most success. And to your point, Kyle, I mean, sales guys aren't always the best planners. You know, I've noticed this in myself.
No.
as I've, you know, started this new, you know, venture, being out on my own and stuff like that. You really have to be disciplined and force yourself, because naturally as a sales, I mean, you're a guy that likes to chase shiny things. Ooh, squirrel, you know, that kind of thing. And, you really need to sit down, take stock, and do your best to understand what the customers are, trying to deal with, and how you best present yourself and the solution that you're selling, whatever that may be, a widget or a service, and how it's going to meet those needs, because otherwise you're going to be frustrated.
So the other question I have that I think is interesting, specific to field reps, is how has COVID, or, you know, this transition from being locked down and unable to sell face to face, how has this impacted the relationship with marketing?
I would say, you know, in some instances it strengthened it. And I think in the instances where it's been strengthened, it's, you know, people have done a lot of what I've talked about here, you know, taking a new inventory of your tools and making sure that they're still applicable in the new day and age. I think those that, you know, it's probably damaged the relationship, or, you know, broadened a gap that was probably there anyway, are those that didn't react or didn't move in one direction together. You know, because marketing, you know, you and I have talked about this, you know, personally, marketing and sales, if they're clicking together, that's a growth company. If there's, you know, some sort of tension is healthy, but if there's a huge chasm in between sales and marketing, that's not a long-term sustainable, you know, type relationship for the organization in its entirety. And I think those that have worked together and moved in the same direction, so the sales guys are out there doing what I'm talking about, talking to their customers. What are the, you know, what are you dealing with? How can we be helping better? You know, how do I need to be selling to you differently? Why are you buying from me now? Those kinds of things. Voice of customer is a VOC, is an acronym that my corporation just throw around a lot. We're the eyes and the ears. We need to be feeding that back to marketing. And, you know, guys like yourself, Kyle, can be helping us develop tools. Maybe it's content or something like that, that, you know, we can be delivering and helping us to be successful at penetrating those new accounts, those new logos that we want to bring into the fold. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I took my best crack at it.
Well, it's your perspective, and I really appreciate that. I think the thing that I find interesting, Rob, as it relates to sales and marketing specifically during COVID, is for a field sales guy, the reliance, or at least the guys that I knew, there was a heavy reliance on their own self and their day to write emails, to create the communication, to use the phone, make connections, have meetings, whatever it was. Like there was always the momentum that felt like they were propelling their own book of business. And then all of a sudden, several of the tools and skills that I would have used to perpetuate those relationships or to move that deal forward or to build a better relationship to, you know, get that new account, I can't do that. But there's this group over here called marketing, and all of a sudden it's like, I wonder, do they have tools that I can use? Can I start sending, like, can I figure out how to send 50 emails a day or 100 emails a day? Or is there a way to start doing, like, what can we now do? Because I'm kind of stuck, right? Like, I don't know how to get a hold of this person because their cell phone I don't have, and their information is not fully in the CRM, and they're not at the office, but they're a really, really good prospect. How do I engage them? And so I just wondered if that changed the value or the perception for field sales guys of what marketing can and does do relative to their sales.
I think for the good outside sales guys, the creative, the ones that aren't, you know, stuck inside the box, I think it absolutely has. You know, you and I were talking about a client prior to this call, and I think they're ones that kind of got behind the eight ball, and now they're like, oh my gosh, we got 2021 staring us in the face, and our pipeline is not good. So I think those that were able to, and this is a very highly overused word right now, so I'm going to apologize, but those who, you know, pivoted and said, you know, admitted to themselves, man, I need some help. This is different. This is new. What resources do I have at my disposal to help me through this? And I think the smart ones have, you know, reached out to their marketing organizations and said, let's talk about this. Here's what I'm seeing. What can we do? What can we work on together to help?
Well, and I think one of the things that's interesting, because coming out of the software world, we saw this sales model and the sales motion that really was embraced by the Oracles, the Microsoft B2B, and Salesforce was really one of the early adopters of this predictive revenue model, right? Where you have either a BDR calling and transferring it over and setting up for an enterprise rep, or you have a sales rep or account manager going out and working accounts into a specific territory. Everything's done on the phone. It's behind a computer screen. Like there's this element of software as a service in technology where I can sell from behind a computer screen just as easily as I could sell face to face. What I'm curious about is if, like the client we were talking about before the call, if there are organizations out there that are looking at these models and actually shifting their entire sales organization, because it's like, well, geez, we didn't, maybe our sales are down 18% this year, but our expenses and our commissions, which you never want to skimp on commissions, I get that, but our commissions are down. And so our cost savings of not sending everybody everywhere is like 30% less. And so we actually have a net positive impact to our EBITDA, our bottom line. Are there things that businesses are learning that makes that sales rep, that field rep, have to have different skills moving forward?
Oh, absolutely. And that was a big part of the conversation I had with the client that we've referenced. I mean, in a lot of cases, an outside sales rep has become an inside sales rep. And those are two kind of different skill sets. You know, an inside sales rep, it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever worked with a lead gen company, there's a lot more crappy ones out there than there are good ones. It's a numbers game. And so it's especially, you know, if you're prospecting, if you're trying to bring in new business, new logos into the portfolio, unfortunately, you're going to have to grind. And, you know, I mentioned how outside sales guys like to chase shiny things. Making 100 phone calls a day is not something that they probably want to do a whole lot of. But
that's not as sexy as flying around the world in your first year, right?
No, it is not. But unfortunately, you know, that's just kind of part of the new reality, especially as it results to building, you know, a book of business with new customers, is you got to be relentless and you got to do the work, because it's not as easy. I think a lot of companies have been shocked by how much business they realize just by incidental contact. And I'll give you an example. Like, one of my old, manufacturing rep buddies, was telling me about this, that, you know, they call on like distributors and stuff like that. And, you know, Tuesday might be a wholesale electric day. And so he would go into wholesale electric on Tuesday and he'd work the hallways and go into the inside staff and lean over the cubicle and, "Hey, Johnny, how was your weekend?" That kind of thing. I don't think they realized how much of their revenue actually came from like discretionary, "Hey, I got this on my desk. Can you help me with this?" And so their solution was to make sure that on Tuesdays, instead of working the hallways, they were working the phones and they were calling Johnny and Jill and everybody, "Hey, how you been? You know, everything good?" So again, kind of being deliberate and shifting, trying to, as best you can, replicate the same sort of interaction. And it's not going to be exactly the same, but as close as you can get, the more successful you'll be.
Well, and the part that's interesting to me is this, the shift in the market. I mean, you talked about people calling and, you know, what's your reason to call, reason to connect, et cetera. It's almost like everything that was old is new again, right? It's this recycling, call it 90s sales methodology, or, you know, the 90s enterprise rep, if you will. Travel wasn't as cheap. You know, it wasn't, communication was still a bit challenging. And so you had to be much more intentional with how you planned any activities that you were doing, right? If you were to go to a specific area or go visit a client, not only did you have pop-ins or drop-ins you were doing with other folks, but you were saying, "Hey, I'm going to be 3, 4, 5 appointments," or whatever it is, client relationship building things deep. So you had to do all of that via the phone, right? Well, fast forward, communication gets easier. You get Blackberries. I can now talk and text, and like everything just becomes easier to communicate and travel. Travel gets cheaper. It's a whole, you know, you get all kinds of flyer miles. It's benefits of the company card. And so you kind of get to this spot where you get away from the basics. And now, you know, it's like, "Oh my gosh, I haven't had to prospect in years." Yeah, but when you started 20 years ago and you didn't have a book of business and you didn't know anybody, how did you become who you are today, right? You got to go back to the basics.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I hadn't really thought of it like that, but that's a it's a pretty compelling analogy. And I think you capture it perfectly. Yeah, you kind of got to retrench, you know, especially for a 20 or 25 year salesperson. I mean, they were probably using payphones.
Right.
It's
exactly right.
Yeah.
Well, and so when we think about the differences here, I think there are some things that, you know, you mentioned a lead gen company, and I'll tell you what, those guys, you can fall down on social media today and run into a lead gen company. Like there is,
I usually get 3 messages a day. from XYZ lead gen.
Oh yeah. You know, and it's like, "Hey, we've solved this for other people just like you. Thanks, but no thanks." But if you think about it, I mean, with the demand and the elements that are there, there are 2 big questions that I think are leaders in sales and are leaders in marketing. Cause more and more the BDR and the SDRs are starting to fall outside of, not, I wouldn't say to the revenue, but outside of the sales organization and more into the marketing organization, because marketing's using it to try and pre-qualify leads and push people through. And, you know, it's like the marketing qualification component has now a sales motion. But are there things that the senior leaders should be looking at as, "Hey, this is actually a much better use of dollars or time," instead of saying, "Hey, you old sales guy, pick up the phone and make 100 calls a day"? Wouldn't it maybe be easier to hire 3 to 5 BDRs and teach them to prospect and just set appointments all day and let your field guys close from the technology that they're uncomfortable behind?
I think they absolutely should. I think you absolutely need to be reevaluating, you know, how you're spending, because to your point, yeah, revenue might be, you know, in decline, but costs are also in decline as well. So the net, hopefully, you know, it's either net neutral or net positive to the bottom line, but I think they absolutely should. And because that money may be better spent. If you had a good lead gen company, I mean, why not invest in that? Or to your point, maybe build your own with the skill set that is required to, you know, be able to just grind that stuff out.
Well, what I have to say is that renting is, and I say renting when it comes to lead gen is really tough for an organization that's starting that for the first time, because there are lessons learned that you don't get to keep, and that walks away when you end that relationship. And there's also things that you know that's institutional knowledge that lead gen company will never, ever, ever appreciate. Like they just,
right.
That doesn't matter. They just won't have that same fluidity in and out of your, but you know, you've convinced me, Rob. I'm going to go spin up a BDR team, or I'm going to go experiment with this. How do I do that? Like, what are the things I need to think about? What are the things, like, if, you know, really high level, you don't have to get me into your consulting as if I was your actual client, but do give me, you know, practical things about how I can rework my team to maybe make it more profitable or to create this demand if I have a fractured relationship with marketing, or, hey, I want to lean into the travel less and see if we can't make it more profitable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say if you've got, you know, starting from scratch, first of all, look across your organization. Are there reps in the field that are actually, you know, making this transition more successfully than others? And I haven't had an opportunity to do this yet, but I think I may in the near future. And my approach is going to be, hopefully we can identify a few of those folks that are good at that. And then what I'd like to do is do a personality profile on that person, because as we've discussed and said many times over the course of this conversation, a full-on outside guy is not the same as someone who could be successful on the inside guy. So if you've got someone that has been successful in making this, you know, shift and, you know, retrenching, doing the right things, figure out what makes that person tick and then get more of them. Or develop more of them, because one of the, you know, good things about doing personality profiles and stuff, I mean, there are a number of companies out there that do that. But one that I work with in particular, they actually, what comes out of that are developmental suggestions, interview questions, you know, suggested interview questions. So that, you know, it's more behavioral of an interview than, you know, just kind of sitting down and chatting, right? Because you want to get to the root of, you know, what their capabilities are, you know, what drives them, that kind of thing. So just kind of broad strokes, that would be my approach.
Well, and I know that this coming from the software world, a lot of the successful senior leaders that I've seen in the software space will find athletes, collegiate folks that are driven, they're highly competitive, and they'll put them in these outbound seats as kind of the, you know, the warm up track, if you will, to inside sales as an account manager, or even to potentially field sales. Is that a good idea? Is that a bad idea? Is developing a bench really where you need to be with an outside organization?
I think you absolutely need a bench. You know, I've seen this not only in corporate, but, you know, in the small business. You know, obviously, you know, corporate's a lot better funded and, you know, capitalized and things like that, but you absolutely need a bench. Absolutely 100%, because, you know, that rock star sales rep could leave you, you know, tomorrow. And if you don't have somebody that is at least close to stepping into that kind of role, then, I mean, that's going to ultimately be a net loss for the organization. But I think that's a great, you know, a lot of great sales teams, that's kind of the progression, is you come in, maybe it's your quotes rep or even a CS, you know, like a customer service person, quotes rep, inside sales, which is a little different than just being a quotes rep, and then outside sales, that kind of progress, because then you learn the entire process from end to end. You know, and then that takes you into a whole nother conversation about, well, how do you keep those people retained so you don't lose the talent? And those, you know, we can have those conversations over many beers, but I think that progression is absolutely valuable to any organization.
Well, and it sounds to me, just listening to you, that one of the outcomes for field driven or sales driven organizations, when it comes to, hey, I'm used to selling face to face or belly to belly, is that we're in this position of reimagination. Not reimagination as in nobody's else has ever done this before, but really in where can I draw from other industries or other models that are successful so that we don't get caught with our pants down for another 2 to 3 months, right? Like everybody adjusted to some degree. And, you know, there's probably still organizations out there that are just waiting for it to go back to normal. But somewhere there's an owner going, how do we make sure that this doesn't happen again? What would you tell those guys?
I think take stock, you know, take stock of where you were, where you've been, and where you are now. And I mean, how many people or how many organizations had to completely shift, you know, and buy laptops and, you know, outfit folks so that they could actually work remotely and that kind of thing. You know, I think you can look in the rear view and hopefully take stock of the lessons you've learned and hopefully put in, you know, risk mitigation strategies and things of that nature for if, you know, this should happen again. And it doesn't have to be an outbreak. You know, I think we're probably just generally speaking, given that we live on the Gulf Coast and hurricanes and things like that happen, I think some of the organizations were just inherently more ready for that in the Houston area. Not all, but many, because we do have disruptions whenever, you know, storm blows in and things like that. So people think about that more than say in the Midwest where, you know, there's not a hurricane, maybe there's a tornado, but it doesn't, you know, put people behind closed doors for days and days on end. Right. So definitely look in the rear view, assess, you know, how you got to where you are now, where you are now. And if that's good, great. If it's not, then fix it. And then figure out, document some of that stuff, risk mitigation strategies for if you have to all of a sudden send your workforce home for an extended period of time. So that'd be my suggestion.
Well, and many of your suggestions I agree with, and it makes perfect sense to me. You know, have a plan, work your plan, keep your plan in play. But I think one of the things that is really easy for businesses is to say, okay, well, I survived this particular blip and not actually learn from it something and make it part of the business continuity plan moving forward. A good example of that is the software company that I worked at before I started my own business is when Rita came through. Hurricane Ike came through. Excuse me. Hurricane Ike came through. They were, yeah, the business was basically shuttered for 2 weeks because of power was out. The customers couldn't get technical support. Nobody could make sales calls. And so when that happened, they hired a new director of operations or whatever. I don't remember what his official title was, but he essentially took every single business process and tool, and it was in the cloud. So you didn't have localized email only delivered to Outlook. You didn't have your CRM installed on your local server. You didn't have your emails or your templates or access to your website at your physical location. Like everything was done distributed into the cloud. And I always thought, well, why does that matter? It's not that big a deal. Harvey hit, but before Harvey hit, we actually had an electrical fire at the building. And I showed up to the building at 7 o'clock in the morning. There's no lights. The transformers are all charred. Like and you're thinking, oh crap, we've got a big number to hit. It's almost the end of the quarter. What are we going to do? We were literally able to pick everybody's devices up. They went home, they plugged in, they logged in, they went back to selling and working. The business thought it was a good idea to have continuity and wanted to keep the team camaraderie by keeping folks in the building. So we rented out some Regis space and we set up for a month while they repaired the building. The flexibility, right? This remote technology, the things that are happening, the game is changing on field sales reps. And I know we want to argue it's like it's not going to be that way long term, but it's
no, you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't think it's the death of the salesman. But I've attended a couple of seminars now on like business to business e-commerce has evolved 5 years in the last 5 months. So it is a new world. And you know, what are people like it or not?
I think that's, so this is where I was headed with the question about marketing earlier. So I have a couple of things on this. The first thing is you're right. I don't think that it's the death of of the salesman by no stretch of the imagination. I do think that it's going to change, at least for a period of time, the skills that are required, right? The stuff that got me here is probably not the stuff that's going to get me there. And when I say there is retirement. That being said, because of COVID, because of the lockdown, because people couldn't move, I think there's a pressure now for marketing to stop thinking about it as, oh, I'm only selling, or I'm only marketing one to many, or I'm only doing these broadcast messages, or it's all about arts and crafts and brand. It's actually an extension of the sales process. And if you think about the sales technique of, hey, I get many commitments, I get people to like me, get their head nodding, right? The many commitments for the field rep now don't actually start in the bar or at the trade show floor. Because people are at home behind their computer, they start with that very first marketing email. They start with what somebody reads when they get on your website. Like, those are all a continuum of the sales process. It's not really marketing. And I think that paradigm shift will have, if businesses can make that paradigm shift, they'll have better alignment and greater growth.
Yeah. No, it's kind of creating sort of a space, right? Well, you know, I've talked about this before as well. The lines between sales and marketing can get a little blurry. I think it's in that blurry space has kind of gotten a little wider now as a result of what you just described, which I agree with 100%.
So, and again, cause I'm a marketing guy. Tell me from your side, what's the coolest campaign you as a salesperson or a sales leader have ever been a part of? And you're like, wow, marketing really nailed it for me.
Oh, good question. I would say, I mean, I've been a part of, you know, going back to my corporate days, I've been a part of a lot of like product launches and, you know, things that were supposed to change the world and never quite did, but it doesn't matter what the product was, but one of them actually did just like blow up and take off like crazy. And I think it was due to a lot of just kind of basic blocking and tackling type stuff. I mean, because I think some companies can get enamored with a product that nobody really wants. And that happens a lot. So the voice of customer that we collected on, you know, during product development on that was super. All of the Marcom, the collateral and stuff was just super slick, you know, got the benefit across. When it launched, we had inventory upon inventory for samples to send out and stuff like that. It just clicked, man. All those things that go along with a big, you know, product push, clicked. And it was a very lucrative product launch for a lot of folks in the company, especially the guys out peddling the stuff. So
that's cool. Well, what that reminds me of is I grew up in Kansas and I had a football coach who moved up from the Texas Panhandle. And I will tell you that there's a difference in Texas football from anywhere else in the nation. And when he showed up, he looked at all of us and he said, do it right, do it light, do it wrong, and we'll be here all day long. And to me, like, I think when sales and marketing, you look at it, you know, old sales guys, new sales guys, anybody, if you're going to do it right, it's really not a lot of work. It's do it right, do it light. But if you do it wrong, oof, you're going to be at this and it's going to be brutal.
All day long.
Anyways. So final thoughts, things that you see in the next 6-12 months that maybe other executives aren't thinking about, or they are thinking about, but they haven't quite figured out, you know, what's going to happen with the election, or how's that potentially going to impact my ability to go back to the field? Are we going to, like, what do you see for sales and field sales in the next 6 to 12 months?
You know, I think I'll start with just kind of a general business perspective. I think we're on the very kind of leading edge of a wave of M&A. There's going to be a lot of consolidation. So I think, you know, what that potentially means for the front end of the business as a sales rep, and be ready for more change because it's coming and it's coming fast. So, you know, I wish I had a crystal ball. I'm not going to get into politics here. I think, Look, I think this has been a perfect storm, right? You've got a pandemic and a politically charged election, and those two things have, I think, magnified each other, through this whole process. I honestly don't see a whole lot of change to status quo, at least in the next quarter. I'm not even sure that the vaccine that everybody's talking about is going to bring a whole lot of relief even into the middle of next year, depending on who you listen to. So I think if it just maintains, the infection rates and everything kind of stay the same and it will settle in, because it's going to be this way for a while, at least I would guess. You don't see behavioral improvements, being able to get out and be as free as you were pre-outbreak until the back half of next year. That's just my gut. So all these things that we've talked about over this time, and I appreciate the invite again, Kyle, take stock, figure out where you're at, the tools that you have at your ready, and the tools that you don't have, reach across the aisle to your marketing guy. Engage that person, tackle this together, head in the right direction together. And I think, when things do start to improve, you'll be in the chalks, right? You'll be ready to get out and get after it fast.
Well, it's been our pleasure to have you on the show today and share, some really valuable nuggets of what sales organizations, sales teams, specifically guys in the field, need to be thinking about, preparing for, and as you say, settling in. Because I like you, I think the only thing that's normal now is change. And whether that's M&A or, I don't have an expense count and as much travel anymore, we don't know what the fallout is from the last 6 months. And we're only I still feel like we're probably only through the first third. So, we've got some time left. You don't have to hurry up and make big sweeping changes, which is great to hear you say. However, you do need to figure out how to navigate through it, because it's not going to, it's not going to just magically disappear tomorrow.
Yep. Agreed.
Well, thanks again, Rob, for being on the show. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, where can they find you besides hiding under a rock?
You can find me on LinkedIn. You can shoot me an email at rsmith@salesacceleration.com, and that's sales, the letter X, and then acceleration. You can also give me a call if you want, 346-224-4594.
Okay, well, thanks again. It's been great. I've had a wonderful time discussing. For those of you who are listening in, you've been listening to Rob Smith and this crazy person talk about field sales going through COVID and what to expect in the coming months. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next week, I've been your host, Kyle Hamer. Thanks for listening.